Welcome to Food for Thought. I'm Dee Dee McGrail.
And I'm Laura Mangone.
Recently retired chef.
Yeah, what's happening?
Yeah, I feel really, really good about this decision. Now, I know I might change my tune and if anybody was listening from last week, I left my, what I think is going to be my last commercial kitchen chef job.
Right.
And the reason I did it was, it was at a assisted living facility, and
they weren't adhering, right?
No one was wearing masks, including the general managers. And it just, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. So, and I really have, and as we were talking last week, I want to be a nanny. And it's not like I didn't just all of a sudden make this decision. I've actually been thinking about it for quite a few years. And I picked up the phone, and I reached out to a woman I hadn't talked to in years. And I remember several years ago running into her in the store, and she had done all kinds of work. She was an engineer at one point, and all kinds of corporate jobs. And I said, "So what are you doing, Michelle?" And she at the time she was around 50, and she said, "I'm a nanny." And I said, "No way! That's so cool, you know." And she said, "Yeah, I love it. I have these two kids, and they're amazing." So I've been thinking about it ever since that conversation,
right?
Because I've wondered how long I'm going to be able to be a chef in a commercial kitchen, because it's so physically
challenging. Yeah.
Challenging. And I just didn't think I could like grow old doing it. I want to work, you know, for another 20 years, you know? So
does she cook also in the house?
Well, no, she doesn't do it anymore, but mind you, I said, when was it when I saw you in the grocery store, when we talked about this? She said that was 10 years ago. Oh, 10 years ago, I had this bug in my head that maybe this would be a good transition, and how wonderful it would be for families if I also offered chef services to the table.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Good. And I mean, I sort of get goosebumps thinking like how awesome this would be, because not everybody can afford to hire a personal chef, but if you have to have your nanny and you've put aside the money for that, that is a priority. That's not a luxury service. A lot of people have to have a nanny, and especially now, they don't necessarily want their kids in daycare and whatnot. So to have a nanny that can also do, you know, chef-level cooking, I thought, you know, so I'm really confident. I was talking to a couple of people who were interested in me, and it might not start until the fall. I haven't heard from them, and I'm wondering. Now I'm going to segue into something strange.
I have a question first. So are you just going to go by like personal references, or are you going to put yourself on like care.com or something, you know, use app or a program, an organization where you can get jobs?
I'm using care.com.
You are. Okay.
And I have to, because in order to get into the agencies, which is I think where you make the real money, you have to have some paid work experience as a nanny. They say, you know, it's great that, you know, a mother is, you know, a great nanny because she has hands-on experience, but they want to see that you've been actually paid to do it for work. So, you know, I have to go through something like care.com, at least in the beginning. But and then I realized, did we talk about Black Lives Matter last week?
We did a little bit, yeah.
Okay, because
Happy Juneteenth, by the way.
Happy Juneteenth. I really, when Black Lives Matter first came out, my first reaction was, okay, yeah, man. You know, I knew exactly why it was happening. Right. And then all of a sudden people were countering with All Lives Matter. And I remember thinking at the time, well, of course they do, but that's not why Black Lives Matter.
This is a recognition of a missing link here. Yeah.
And I never realized, this was years ago when it started, that this is now this is still a controversial subject for people. And it's like, it's so simple to me. Now this woman, and I'll tell you why I'm doing this segue, but I think her name is Candace Owens, the black woman who's, she's like involved with Trump and stuff, and she's a very articulate.
The one who just retired yesterday?
Oh, did she?
I think if that's who you're talking about.
She's young.
I think that might be. I think she just left because she felt she was not being honored. She felt, let me see if it's her, Candace Owens. I think, oh no, maybe that's not her, sorry.
So there's a whole movement within the black community, and I call them black elitists, because there's a movement within the black community that says, you know what? You guys are, you know, just suffering victimhood. This is your fault. You know, why does, you know, 45% of the crime committed by 13% of the population? You know, and it's like, yeah, but the reason why they're committing, black folks commit 45% of the crime is not some fault of character. It's because of being oppressed and just stepped on for hundreds of years. Right. And so when you have that kind of history, yeah, you're gonna be cultivating a you know, a not so great population, but there's a reason why that happened. And I don't understand why the black folks who are these elitists, you know, calling out all of these, you know, of the ne'er-do-well black folks. But getting back to my point is that these nanny positions, I gave them my Facebook pages and I thought, oh, I just recently did a Black Lives Matter post, you know, one of those things that was shareable meme or something.
Right.
And it was just describing how, you know, why you shouldn't take offense to it and what it means and that they're not thinking they're special, you know? And then I thought, ooh, I wonder if someone's going to have issue with that. And then I thought, you know what? If they do, I don't want to work for them anyway.
Okay. Right.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone doesn't, you know, just the same reason you just left this position. They were not like-minded. They weren't taking your concerns to heart. And yeah, I think generally we work with people or for people that we are like-minded, have the same values, have the same moral compass in our lives. So yeah.
Especially working in someone's home on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely.
So if my boss, you know, in some corporate job doesn't agree with my political stance, who cares, you know? But if you're working in someone's home, I think, you know, I almost kind of want them to be either an independent or a Democrat. I mean, or a cool Republican, you know, a reasonable Republican. Wow. Anyway, so I had a couple of...
Getting back to food.
Because I have a couple of topics. You know how... last week I brought up the foods of cuisine of
Iceland, which I have to tell you, a friend of mine who I go to Guatemala with, not annually, we used to go on the same trip. So the organization that I'm affiliated with does multiple trips, and I used to go in July, but then I segued to the March trip, which is when most of the Capital Health people, the people in my local area and the doctors that I room with and the nurses in my sort of circle of friends started going on the March trip instead of the July trip. So I switched. So this gentleman who's lovely, who lives down in Cape May, listens to our show regularly. Yeah. And he sent me a message just after our show last time and let me know that we were talking about the foods of Iceland. We were talking about puffin, and he shared with me that he has eaten puffin. He actually did a semester abroad in Iceland. He was an exchange student there. And he has had puffin, and he said it's very tasty. He's had it slightly smoked, so not fully smoked, but slightly smoked. He said it's delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Sure it is. I know they're cute, but yeah, they taste good.
A lot of things are cute.
Yeah.
Little lambs are cute, too. Cute
when they're little, yeah.
Slather them in garlic and rosemary and lemon, and I'm all over them.
So
yes, we talked about Icelandic foods.
So I wanted to sort of, look up a cuisine that's not, like, hot, you know, not trendy. And so I looked up Fiji.
Fiji?
Fiji. So I have a few Fijian dishes to discuss.
Okay.
I also have a couple of interesting anchovy recipes to discuss.
I'm interested to see if I know of any of these because my mom spent some time in Fiji.
And, okay.
Whenever she would come home from a trip, she would make some interesting dishes that were indicative of where she was. So I'm curious, what do you got?
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that soon. I wanted to ask you first about, coming soon, we're going to talk about some Fijian dishes. Did you ever do something where, like, you see a Facebook post or an article and it talks about the health benefits or maybe even the dangers of consuming certain foods? And for example, this one is about plant and seed oils, plant and nut oils.
The benefits or the detriment?
The detriment that pretty much they were saying that the best oils that you should eat, and like canola and vegetable oil definitely are not good. And I've always known that.
Yeah, canola oil stands for Canadian oil. It was used to lubricate machinery.
Right.
It's grapeseed oil, but it's crap.
Yeah, I thought for a while I would use very little vegetable or canola oil. I would do it for like deep frying stuff for catering jobs and stuff, which I know I shouldn't, but
I use vegetable oil on occasion. I don't use olive oil for everything.
But this one was saying that, and of course I can't remember all the details, but it was saying that basically you should have olive oil, butter, they said, is fine.
Yeah.
And in terms of a clear oil, you know, one to use for frying, and they said it should be peanut oil,
not safflower,
because they were also saying that seed oils, there's something about seed oils that's detrimental to your health. And of course, I don't have the article. I'll have to just look it up. But what are your
my go-to if I'm cooking is I'll use sesame oil if I'm doing something Asian. I do use butter often.
Mm-hmm.
More times than not, I use butter with a splash of olive oil. But olive oil, as you know, has a low smoking point, so it's not the best thing to use when you're sauteing. Olive oil, and it's a waste of good olive oil, quite frankly. I mean, if you're going to cook with olive oil, it shouldn't be extra virgin olive oil because you're wasting, the flavor of it is diminished. The smoking point is extremely low, so you have to use a low temperature, not a high temperature. I use safflower oil. I use soybean oil. I use coconut oil. I mean, those are my go-to.
Well, according to
this. And I use butter. I use, more times than not, I use butter.
According to this article, you really should not be using the soybean oil or the safflower.
I'm curious. We have to do more research on that because I'm curious why.
I would, maybe we'll follow up on the next segment or even the next show, but I would like to dig a little deeper into this. And according to this article, sesame oil, it's marginal. It's okay. It's okay to use because it's so strong that you tend to use very small amounts in cooking. So
I'm not talking toasted sesame oil, which is strong in flavor and color. Just plain sesame oil, not toasted or roasted.
But what's interesting is because, you see an article. This is why it's so great to save, your articles when you read them on Facebook, because I read this and I thought, okay, that's it. I'm just doing peanut and olive oil. And then also other oils were like avocado oil, coconut oil, you know, those were all good. But then when I was trying to remember or really delve into it, I started to do a Google search and I couldn't find the article. So,
yeah, and I'll be honest with you. Sometimes I see those things pop up on Instagram. I see them pop up on all social media sites. And I wonder if they're just bullshit. Like, sometimes, you know, they'll say, you know, doctors say, don't eat these four items. Like, it looks like it's almost a scam. It almost looks like it's leading you into an advertisement of some sort.
Right. Or like tomatoes are bad suddenly.
Yeah, exactly.
Tomatoes cause inflammation. You should never eat tomatoes.
Right.
Well, another one that I started doing, and of course I can't remember why, but the health benefits of green tea. I'm really trying to have it be, they say you should drink like 4 to 5 cups of green tea a day in terms of getting.
I drink a ton of green tea. It's really good for you. It's an antioxidant. It really, I know in Asian practices, what they do is make poultices of green tea and use them as like a tincture to pull impurities out of your body.
Yeah.
I love it. I always make a big pitcher of green tea, and usually I'll use like a mango or orange or something, some fruity component in there. And I drink it all the time. I love it. Homemade. No, you know, sometimes I'll put a little bit of honey in it, but no sugar in it. Yeah, so we're running out of time. When we come back, why don't we talk a little bit more about Fijian foods?
Yes, Fijian foods when we come back.
All right, we'll be back.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and medical expenses are covered. If you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over 60, call 24/7 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. Attorney Advertising. William Stepacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $750 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill for the name brand again. Get generic Sildenafil for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-590-0443 today and save up to $650 and get 50 pills for just $99. Generic Sildenafil is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting to take your call now. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
The Home Service Club sponsors this paid advertisement. Attention homeowners. Broken AC? Water heater? Pool pump? Fridge on the fritz? You need home warranty coverage from the Home Service Club. HSC provides coverage for up to 47 different appliances and systems in your home for around $1 a day, backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote and get your first month free, plus $75 off your first year. 800-465-9181. 800-465-9181. That's 800-465-9181.
Okay, we're back.
Welcome back.
So, how are you feeling about quarantine right now? Are you over it?
Oh, I'm over it. Yeah.
I know we're still supposed to be adhering. I heard recently, which I was a surprise to me. I really haven't been listening to the news all that often, but I listened to Governor Murphy's address yesterday when I was in the car. And apparently we're not really supposed to be out and about as much as I think people are out and about.
Well, I think it's misleading for folks because, you know, things are starting to open up And I think a lot of people interpreted that as, yay, Corona's
okay, we're out. Right.
You know, and it's not. I mean, I've always known, you know, once the restaurants open, I'm not going. If they decided to have a baseball game tomorrow, I would not go, you know, so I'm going to continue. I don't want to be in an enclosed room with a bunch of people, and that includes my own kids.
Yeah, and that is definitely not open yet. Just the outdoor seating at restaurants is open. We just actually opened this week. Our patios are open for lunch and for dinner on Thursday through Saturday. And so yesterday was the first day, and it was a slow day. I mean, we did like 20 something for lunch and probably the same for dinner. Fortunately, we still are feeding frontline workers through an organization in Lawrenceville. So we had 100 lunches going out the door, you know, from the catering point of view. But very slow going. And it's just surprising now, you know, where I live on a pretty main road. And just looking at the traffic flow and the difference in how, you know, from last week to this week, the amount of people that are out and about, it's pretty startling.
Yeah, I mean, I would go, you know, and I've often thought this, you know, in terms of retail, like I would go into an Ulta and buy makeup. I would go into a Marshall's. And
but are they even, I don't even think they're even open yet though. Right?
I think it's coming soon. I think it's next Monday. And, you know, but also I'm still going to be wearing a mask, and I would hope that everybody in that store is wearing one.
Definitely.
And, you know, cause I do think that we have to, the economy has to open back up, but the bottom line is that a lot of people aren't listening to this, and some people think the masks are ridiculous. I think the people who refuse to wear masks, I went to a funeral the other day. Uh-huh. And, you know, that was the first time I had been in a building with a bunch of people, and they were trying to have people sit, you know, every other row. And I was definitely, you know, more than 6 feet from anybody.
So did everybody have masks on?
Not everybody. There was about 5 assholes that didn't have them. Mm. And I thought, you know, are you telling me 5 people in here have asthma or some health issue why they can't wear one? I think it's a combination of ignorance and or belligerence.
Yeah,
I think it's any combination of those two things is why people are refusing to wear masks.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think, is that they're just flat out ignorant. They're just not educated enough to realize that there's science behind it.
Yeah. So it's interesting that, you know, the Northeast and the middle of the country is sort of on this sort of evened out plateau of cases, but now Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, and entire west side of the country is like having like record breaking. They're like having their big blast right now with record breaking cases. They're going through what New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut did.
Because they opened up a month ago.
Because they opened up. And
look
what's happening now. They're having all these horrible cases. They're having hospitals are, you know, panicking, and they're setting up medical units out in parks. And, you know, the same thing that we had done, it's sort of progressed. Like, I don't understand why people didn't, like, pay attention. Like, this is science. This isn't just somebody saying, you know.
I know.
Crazy. It's our president is gearing up for a big rally. People are lined up in Tulsa for his rally this week, which apparently his people are saying, the White House is saying that they are going to have temperature taking, they're going to have masks and hand sanitizers available. And the people that are running the convention center where this rally is taking place are still, like today, trying to get things passed so that people have to, like, you'll be breaking the law if you don't have a mask on. You'll be breaking the law if you're not social distancing. And it's all just happening. People are all just lined up outside waiting to get in.
Yeah. And they have to sign a release that says they can't sue if they get COVID.
Yeah, if you get sick and die, it's not our fault.
And the irony of that, I mean, if that doesn't say it all,
like you're at risk.
Right. If that doesn't say it all, then I don't know what does. And I think that I think part of the reason why people are such idiots about this is because it hasn't affected them personally. But when you know someone or two, I know two friends whose mothers died within the past 6 weeks. And I have another friend who's my age who didn't die, but he was in the hospital and it looks like he might have permanent lung damage. That's all I need. And I didn't even need that to happen to me to respect what I should be doing.
What anyone should need is just the fact that 100,000 people have died.
Right. Within like 3 months, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway. I digress. So I have to sort of, it's tricky. I'm trying to put you, I could not print out, you know how I love print friendly recipes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but these were none of these were print friendly. So I've got you in a little tiny video right above my browser here. But this one is called, and again, we're talking about Fijian food. This is kokoda, K-O-K-O-D-A. And it's basically a Fijian version of ceviche.
Oh, that sounds good.
But they do it with, and I've never done my ceviche this way. And of course now the influences on Fijian cuisine are going to be Indian, Asian, what's the other one?
South Pacific.
Yes, you know, but Indian, Asian slash, and there was one other country that's, anyway, it'll come to me. But so they do their ceviche with the lime juice. They put in diced tomatoes, chilies, and coconut cream.
Yeah, coconut milk.
Mm-hmm. Yep, coconut cream and I was going to ask you, do you know what I've never used this pepper cream, a green capsicum pepper?
Capsicum.
Capsicum.
Yeah. So capsicum is the element that makes all peppers hot. It's the component.
Yeah, I thought that
makes all peppers hot, but there is a pepper called capsicum pepper.
I thought that what you're talking about was capsaicin. Capsaicin is different than capsicum, or are they the same thing?
I think they're the same thing.
Okay. Anyway, so I guess what he's saying, what the recipe is saying is they want a green spicy pepper.
Right.
Right, instead of a green sweet pepper. So, you know, and it's just that there's no need to go through the method. It's, you know, same version, you know, just the different version with the coconut cream, but I thought that sounded really good. Also, we have a Fijian roro recipe. It's R-O-R-O with boiled cassava. Have you ever had cassava?
I love cassava, actually.
That's a...
It's a root.
Right, but it's typically, isn't it in Latin cuisine?
It's South Caribbean, yeah, cassava.
Caribbean.
Yeah,
okay.
Brazilian, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had it, unfortunately. But this is a stew, and it's made from just greens. So it's, you know, spinach and onions and lime juice, and I'm trying to get to the actual recipe, coconut milk, water, chilies, salt. And so you have this stew, which is just all greens, and in this case, all spinach. Coconut milk, and then you have it with boiled cassava on the side.
That sounds good.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds really good.
So
cassava is just sort of like a potato. It's like a sweet potato.
Right, like a yucca.
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 Yep.
It's funny, whenever I always say yucca, and then depending on what chef friend I'm talking to, they'll correct me and say it's yucca. And then I start saying yucca, and somebody else corrects me. What is it?
I say yucca.
Right. So you just told me to say yucca.
No, I said, did I? You know what? I'm thinking of, so you want to know something. When we moved to Surgeonsville, there are a million yucca plants all over the property.
Really?
Deer resistant, and they have giant spikes with big white flowers that come out, and the roots are basically the roots are what you are right. eating.
Right.
These little suckers are like impossible to kill. Impossible. I used like dynamite to try to kill some of the plants, and they just keep coming back and coming back.
Oh, really?
Very, very strong crop.
Huh.
And whenever they were blooming, I would bring, I guess we had a party at one point, and all of some of the guys at work, who, as you know, were Guatemalan, came up and they saw the yuccas, and they were like, when these things bloom, you have to bring us all the blooms. And what they would do is the white flower on the ends of these blooms would get pretty large. And whenever they would bloom, I would cut down the stalks and bring them to work, and they would stuff them much like Italians would stuff a zucchini flower.
Uh-huh.
So they would take the white flower from the yucca. and stuff them with, and bread them and fry them just like we would do a zucchini flower.
And so you had an established yucca.
I have acres of them. Acres.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll post a picture. I'll send you a picture. Like
okay.
Every part of my garden, you know, we had quite a bit of land, and all the gardens had yuccas everywhere because they're extremely deer resistant. They keep their color. They're drought tolerant. They're actually really, I like them. They looked cactus-like. And every year around June or July, they would put up these giant spires of white flowers that were beautiful, but very fibrous. And the roots, I will post one of those pictures because the roots are indestructible. And if you dug them up, you just had to peel them. And I did it once. I mashed them. We were having a party and I needed something. And I literally went out in the garden and ripped up a yucca plant. And scraped all the edge of the plant and boiled them and mashed them. They're like potato. You know, it's like a cactus, which is like a potato, just a root vegetable.
So people could be planting these strategically in their gardens just to keep the deer away.
They should be. I mean, the perimeter of my entire house, every garden had these in it. I will find okay. pictures.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a couple more Fijian food items to talk about. How much time do we have, Laura?
We've got a few more minutes.
Okay. So this one's called ginger fish, which I was kind of intrigued by, although it's very simple. So you use like 2 or 3 pounds of snapper or grouper or cod, any firm white fish. It's got lemon. You rub the fish with lemon juice, then you refrigerate it for about an hour. Rub it with vegetable oil.
It's cooking it then, right? It's sort of.
Yeah, I guess it's letting it macerate a little bit in the lemon juice first. And then in a blender, mix thoroughly soy sauce, corn oil, white wine, garlic, sugar, and fresh ginger. So it actually calls for, you know, like 2 teaspoons of fresh ginger root and 2 teaspoons of sugar, you know, 3/4 cup of white wine, which I don't know what white wine is doing in a Fijian recipe. But, oh, yes, it also said there was European influences, too.
Oh, so okay.
It's sort of a Indian, Asian, plus European influences. So maybe that's where the white wine is coming from. And you just pour that over the fish and bake for 40 minutes. Very simple, but
sounds delicious.
Never quite did something like that with the ginger and a little, then the sugar. And then the final one, although there's lots more, is a coconut chutney, which I've never made a chutney out of coconut. Have you?
No, I have not.
So it's, especially where the main ingredient is coconut.
Right.
So it calls for 2 cups of freshly grated coconut, 1 cup of chopped fresh cilantro leaves, fresh lemon juice, minced fresh ginger, and one green chili chopped fine.
Huh.
Sounds interesting, and probably with the real fresh coconut, you know, as opposed to the stuff that we buy in a bag.
Right.
Might
that
be kind of nice. Yeah.
I think I would like that.
Now here's one called Fijian Raita. And it just looks to me, oh, this one's a little interesting. And it's got 2 cups of sour cream or yogurt, 1 cucumber grated and 1 carrot grated, garlic, green chili and cumin. So it's just a little different.
Sounds like a tzatziki, right?
Exactly. Or an Indian.
Sounds really right good. Now. All right, we are running out of time for this segment. Why don't we talk about more when we come back?
Sure, and I wanted to add a couple of anchovy dishes to run by you, and I also have some pasta questions.
Okay, great. Okay. We'll be back.
I can't get my computer to work.
Let me help you with that.
How'd you do that?
I just got techie with Geeks On Site.
Our geeks literally come on site. No need to stop what you're doing or block off time. We come to your home, office, or wherever you are. And we don't just fix whatever computer issues you might be having. We explain and teach you along the way.
We'll help you instantly. Call 844-606-8411. That's 844-606-8411.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. That's 1-855-398-1754.
Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for just $99. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
And welcome back to Food for Thought.
We're back.
So
I didn't realize that the ceviche, I was just looking. So not only is that, it's the most traditional dish in Fiji is the ceviche that you mentioned. It's like their national dish, the kokoda.
Yeah. And I can't believe there's got to be another cuisine where they use the coconut milk. This is the first time I'm hearing of it.
I mean, they use it in Thai cuisine, but not as in a ceviche like this. We use it in Indian cooking all the time. But
right, so.
But this is interesting. I think I'm going to make this because it sounds, I like coconut milk.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it. So I was looking on just, I think you and I both love anchovies, right?
Love
anchovies. And unfortunately, most people don't.
Correct.
And I remember.
And they're wrong.
They're wrong. When my ex-husband and I, we used to, Caesar salads were like our craze, you know, back in the day. It was like, you know, this 25 years ago. And we used to order them wherever we went, and we also ordered them extra anchovies. So we would say, can we get some extra anchovies on the side?
Mario and I were always on the quest for the perfect Caesar, and then we realize that it's not possible. You just have to make your own.
Right, exactly. And I think as time
they never meet, they even come close to what our expectations.
It's almost like, and I'm sure Caesars were becoming popular more than 25 years ago, but 25, 30 years ago, I think it almost seemed like the more time that went on, so the closer we got to, let's say, the early 2000s, that more and more we would find ourselves going to restaurants and they would say, oh no, we don't put any anchovy in the Caesar dressing. And we were like, what?
Then we don't want it.
You know, and then before you know, and then it was like, so now
most people don't understand the reason Caesar salad is so Caesar dressing is so delicious is because of the anchovy.
Because of the anchovy.
It's nutty. It's not fishy. It's
unctuous.
Yeah.
Unctuous. People are just they don't know food. You know, that's why when my other chef friend Linda said to me, "Do you ever worry that people aren't going to like your food?" I'm like, "No, not really, because nobody knows food, luckily, so they think everything's great." This one is a Swedish dish, and I forgot to write down the Swedish name, but it's basically anchovies au gratin. So it's made with you slice up potatoes and you saute onions, and so you put the potatoes on the bottom, you know, with butter on the bottom of the dish, then you put the onions on, and then a layer of anchovies, and then more potatoes.
Are these fresh anchovies?
No, these are just plain old canned anchovies. Like, not
salted,
the good ones.
Salted, preserved.
Salty, canned. I don't even think these are with the good ones. But, and then, so you've got the top layer of potato, and then you add cream, and you bake it in the oven. Like, how good does that sound, Laura?
And actually, I just looked it up, and it's named after a person. It's named after Janssen. It's called Janssen's Temptation.
Yeah, I heard it called something else.
Janssen's Frestelay.
Frestelay, that must be, that's the definition of, that's the interpretation of temptation. But don't you want to make it, Laura?
Oh my God, it looks delicious.
Make it as a side dish? I mean, geez. And then there was another one, a Tunisian recipe that I came across, and it was called Brick Bill and Chua, which I guess that's the anchovy. And basically they're little pastries. So the filling consists of equal parts anchovy, and in this case they use canned tuna. But I would imagine you could do anchovy and canned salmon or any kind of canned fish.
Right.
And you've got onions, capers, and believe it or not, Parmesan cheese, which what is that doing in a Tunisian recipe?
Does that sound
a little hokey?
That sounds a little odd.
So anyway, it's like basically you make this filling and you put it into phyllo dough.
That sounds good. It sounds delicious.
It's worth a shot. You know, I kind of turned my nose up. Tuna and Parmesan, what? But, you know, I've been wrong before. So anyway, that's all my world cuisine. Now I have to add, I need your incredible expertise.
Oh, yes.
In all my years of cooking, I have never made, except for gnocchi, and I only did it once. I made a spinach gnocchi.
Yeah.
I did it once. I was like 27 years old. Uh-huh. I've never made homemade pasta.
And any kind of pasta?
Never.
Okay, well.
I feel like
pay attention to me for 2 minutes and it'll be really quick and painless.
Okay.
Four cups of flour. You don't have to even write it down. Stop looking for something.
I'm writing it.
You don't need to write it. Just pay attention and you'll get it.
I'm going to pause. I need to write it.
You will get it. 4 cups of flour, 4 eggs, 4 tablespoons of oil, 4 teaspoons of water. Period. End of sentence. You don't need to write it down.
I'm writing it.
Okay.
Okay, so.
So, 4 cups of flour. You can use whole wheat flour. You can use bread flour. You can use regular all-purpose flour. Put it in a bowl. Put a little bit of salt in it. Sorry, I forgot the salt. Put a little bit of salt in it.
Now the salt is integral. So when you say a little bit of salt, how much salt are you putting in there?
For every cup, I would probably put a teaspoon. Although most pastas that are on the market that are sold that are dry or even fresh do not have salt in them. That's why salting water is so important, because that's when you get the flavor into the pasta. That's when you get the salt into the pasta.
Why don't dried pastas have salt in them?
Because they usually don't. Sometimes it makes a little grainy consistency in it. Sometimes those little teeny granules can oxidize in there and turn colors. They don't. They're just flour, water, and oil, and egg.
And I'll bet you the salt issue is probably one of the main reasons why fresh pasta is so much better, because you're starting the cooking process. You're starting with salt rather than trying to infuse it with salt during
And the other thing is, while we're talking about it, I have seen people when I've gone to people's homes where they're, you know, cooking pasta. Think about how salty the ocean is. That is as salty as you want your pasta water.
Right.
You don't put the salt in before it comes to the boil, because then you're just corroding the bottom of your pot. You should wait till it comes to a boil and put in a generous amount. Like for a gallon of water, you could put almost 1/4 cup of salt. A lot of salt.
Really? That much?
It should be that salty. It should be like you're tasting ocean water. That's salty. Because that's how salt gets into the pasta. So getting back to the pasta, you have flour.
Right.
Put a little salt in it, but you don't have to. You mix up eggs and oil and water. You dump it into a hole in the middle of the flour. You've made a hole in the center, and you can start with the spoon. I usually just do it with my hands and move it around until you incorporate all the flour. And then you knead it for a few minutes. Then you put it on the counter covered with plastic wrap, and you leave it for about 30 minutes. It makes the gluten expand. It makes everything relax. And there you have it. And then at that point, you can roll it with a rolling pin. You could put it in a machine. You could.
Do you put it in a machine?
If I'm making spaghetti or linguine or fettuccine, I roll it with a pin, and I roll it up like a jelly roll with a generous amount of flour between it, and I cut it. I hand cut it, and then I loosen it up and lay it out and let it dry a bit, or you can put it over a stick. You can put it over a broom handle. I just like fluff it around. Traditionally, my mother would put a sheet on a bed and just throw it there and toss it around periodically and let it dry out.
How long do you need to let it dry out?
You don't need to let it dry out. When you buy fresh pasta, it's not dry. It's fresh. It's moist. So you don't need to. You could cook it right away, right then and there.
Yeah, but I've read though that in the various recipes that you should dry it for a bit of time.
You don't have to. You can. Fresh pasta is not dry. Fresh pasta that you buy in the store.
No, I know. I mean, it's not going to be. When I say dried, it's not going to be dried like the stuff you buy in the store. But it's going to be a little bit drier than it was.
Yeah, no. But when you purchase fresh pasta, it's just like you just cut it, and there you have it.
Right.
We would always dry it because we're making large amounts of it, and we would be making it earlier in the day to have later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, you don't want to just have it in a clump because it's going to mush together eventually. But if you spread it out, let it dry a little bit, it could go, you know, you could let it dry for 30 minutes. You could let it dry for 4 hours.
Right.
It's just going to get drier. It's just going to, you know, just moisture is going to wick from it, evaporate from it.
And so you don't use a machine ever?
Mario, we were using machine when we were doing a lot of it. We put it through the roller just to flatten it. But then if I'm making ravioli, I just leave the sheets long like that, and I'll, you know, put pipe down filling and put another sheet on top. I don't usually use a machine. If I'm just making pasta for, you know, for six people, I roll it out. I put some flour on it.
Is it easy to roll it out nice and thin?
Yes.
It is.
It should be if you're, yeah. And again, it's something that you have to have a little bit of a feel for it. So when you're mixing it, you can have flour that has more gluten content. You could have flour that has less gluten content. So when it's sitting for that half an hour, you feel it. You see if it feels soft, if it feels hard as a rock, you might want to incorporate a little bit more liquid into it as you're kneading it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something you have to become familiar with, just because you'll know what it feels. You know, it's like when your grandmother used to say, you know, you put it in until it looks right. You put it in until it feels right. But it should be pliable. It should be malleable. And when you let it sit for that half an hour, it softens up a bit because the gluten expands. It all gets smoother. It should be easy to roll out. It should be, you know, not as easy as a buttered pastry. You know, it's not going to be that soft, but it should be pretty malleable.
So if I were to use rice flour, wouldn't that be gluten-free pasta?
It would be, yep.
Okay.
Now, and the best thing is if you were making gnocchi, which, you know, you can make with potatoes, you can make, as we've talked in the past, you can make nudi, which has ricotta.
That's what I was going to make. I wanted to make the homemade pasta and nudi.
Okay. So with the homemade pasta, you can make it in the shape of a gnocchi, but just regular. You can just, from that ball that sat for a half an hour, you can just cut off little pieces and make snakes out of it and then cut little pieces. Like.
And what is that called?
If you were to shape it with your thumb, it would be like a cavatelli. You know, generally you wouldn't leave like a little dumpling like that because it's going to be like a little dough ball. It's going to be heavy. But if you make small enough ones, it's delicious.
Right.
It's like a cavatelli, but it doesn't have the little, you know, the little curve. So a cavatelli would be just those little squares that you then take your thumb and sort of like you're playing, what's that hockey game where you fling it with your thumb? Do you know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
So I'm psyched. And this is for Father's Day. And so Dylan wants, he requested pasta. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? And I'm going to do this because I've never done it. And I'm ashamed that I've never done it. And
it's so easy. It's
I think it's also because whenever I do cook pasta, it's for catering jobs. Right. You know, I'm not going to make my own pasta for catering jobs. So, and it's not my go-to personally. So I think that's how I've avoided it all these years, but I think it would be nice for Don as a special occasion to do it.
Nice.
And then, I wanted to make, he wants clam sauce, which I'm thrilled. Nice. The white clam. And then I was going to do a red base sauce, and I think I'm going to do an amatriciana. But instead of pancetta, I would like to use pork belly.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Right?
Yeah. And lots of crushed red pepper.
Sounds great. Yeah. So the homemade pasta. And then I looked up some, how much time? All right, we're running out of time. Have you ever heard of alla norma?
No.
The pasta sauce? It's supposed to be super traditional Italian sauce, and it's got tomatoes in it, but it's also got eggplant and ricotta cheese. Have you ever heard of it? Alla norma, A-L-L.
I've never heard of it by that name. I mean, I've had pasta with eggplant and ricotta.
Okay, maybe it's just not.
Every Wednesday we would have, you know, we would say macaroni with ricotta.
Right.
Yum. That sounds good.
Yeah, man.
All right, you're going to be eating well on Sunday.
That's right. I'm going to have small portions, but I plan on indulging in the pasta.
Good. Sounds good. So we are running out of time. Okey-doke. So that was an interesting chat.
Yes.
I learned and, a little bit about Fijian foods.
Fijian?
Fijian.
Not Fugazi, it's Fijian.
Fijian. That's how you pronounce it. If it's from Fiji, it's Fijian.
I thought it was Fijian.
Fijian.
All right, well, sorry.
So we're going to have to ask Siri for confirmation on that, but yeah, I know it to be Fijian.
A lot of right. Yuka, yucca, well, Fijian, Fijian.
We will see you next week, everybody, and we'll talk about more food.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck with your pasta.
Thank you. I'll let you know.